They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today, I have a friend, Debbie Goonan. She is one of the most prolific writers on the internet, and anything that happens, Debbie has a way of finding out, and she always shares the news. So I'm so glad Debbie's on with us and she's on our side because she's amazing. So Debbie, we have some really sad news to start the year off with.
Yes, we do.
And for those of you who do not know her, Donnie Venetian was a terrific advocate, and she wrote a weekly column in the Los Angeles Times about homeowner association issues, and she gave advice, and she helped homeowners, numerous homeowners, over the years try to deal with the problems they had. And unfortunately, she was murdered right after Christmas.
Just shocking.
It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking. She was killed. And I think all of us have lost a good friend.
Indeed, yes. Very sad time.
It is a very sad time. And I was thinking the other day about all the people who started off on this journey with us and over the years that we have lost.
Yes.
And there's so many of them. There's so many of them. It's scary. But anyway, Donnie, rest in peace. Thank you for everything you've done. And we're going to miss you.
Indeed. So, I mean, I used to look forward to her column every weekend.
Yeah, and she did a great job. I remember when she first came on the scene. She started talking, and no, she knew more than everybody. Well, come to find out, she had, she had a JD, and so from the legal standpoint, yes, she did know a lot, and she had also come at it from someone who had battled her own HOA.
Right.
So her own condo, she finally got out of it, got into a nice big house, and she was quite happy. And she continued.
She had a big garden in her backyard, and I've seen some of the pictures, and she used to tell me what she was growing in her garden, everything from figs to, flowers and vegetables. Everything. Of course, they have good weather in Southern California, much better than we have in these parts, Sue, where we have a long winter.
No, we have a lot of ice and snow right now. we're kind of stuck with the nasty weather. But yeah, she showed me on Google Earth and she gave me a tour of her garden. And she never ate out and she didn't buy anything from the store. She grew all her own food. So she was healthy. She was a health nut. I loved her garden. I loved the way it looked. But anyway, so rest in peace, Donnie. We're dedicating this, our first show of the year, to you. And we're going to start off by talking about stupid rules. Right, Debbie?
That's right. There's no shortage of them in HOA land.
Stupid rules. Now, one of the big ones in California. Go ahead. Take it away. Garage rules.
Okay. The best one that I saw about a week and a half ago, a story was going, it was actually going viral on the internet, where the HOA decided that they're going to institute a new garage door policy. Now, we know that it's quite common for HOAs to insist that everybody keep the garage door closed so that nobody else has to look at the mess in your garage, right?
Right.
But this particular HOA, it's actually a condominium association, had just the opposite rule. They wanted all of the members, they insisted that all of the members open their garage doors from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Just leave it completely open so that the people in the management of the association could make sure that there was nothing going on in those garages, because one resident had reportedly been housing somebody in their garage. Somebody was sleeping there overnight. And so the management decided, well, the way we're going to stop that is we're just going to make sure that nobody can close their garage and they have to leave it open all day.
And if they did close it, there was a fine, right?
$200 fine. If they were to close the garage door, they would be fined $200. And it was a little unclear whether it would be $200 a day or a week, or that part was a little unclear. But of course, the residents were very upset about this because, you know, in addition to keeping cars in the garage, I mean, they might have the car out during the day to go to work, but in addition to all that, they have bicycles and, you know, maybe some lawn tools or, you know, children's toys or camping gear, whatever. And it's all stored in people's garages. And some of the stuff is quite valuable. So the complaint around the neighborhood, and it's a valid complaint, is, well, if I leave my door open all day long, people are going to steal me blind.
Yeah.
So several of the local television stations, you know, interviewed some of the owners and residents, and they showed them, you know, like locking their bikes down to the wall or removing everything from their garage and storing it elsewhere inside their house, which, of course, makes no sense. Like if you have something like bicycles and gas grills and that sort of thing, they're not really safe inside the house. So I guess enough residents were upset about it. They went to the media. The media made a big deal out of it. And the whole thing went kind of viral on social media. And after about a week and a half, the association did have to back off on their rule. But so now they say, well, okay, you don't have to keep your garage door open, but we're going to look at some other reasonable way.
Yeah.
Reasonable way to get around this problem, because they don't want anybody harboring anybody in the garage.
So one person did it. So one person allegedly. Now they need to have this cannon to go and harass everybody. And by the way, raise some money, because $200, whatever. You know, it's
right.
Typical that you have management or board members who really don't know what they're doing, and it's so vague. So if they decide they like you and you close your garage door, they'll fine you $200, maybe for the week, or just plain $200. But if they decide I've got a big mouth and I'm just going to go all over the place and talk about it and they can't stand me, it's going to be $200 a day.
Right.
Because they didn't specify that. You know, it's so vague.
Yeah, they didn't specify it. And I did a little bit of research into this association, and I found out that it was built about 40 years ago in the 1970s. They're built in they call them fourplexes. I guess there's four units to each building. And they were built originally as rentals, affordable rentals. And then after some years, maybe 10 or 15 years, they later converted them to condominiums. When they were originally built, there were no actual garages. They were more like carports. And over the years, as the properties have been maintained or updated over the years, people who owned the units added the automatic rolling garage doors for security purposes and extra storage. And so over the years now, people have purchased these places, and of course, the price that they pay for a unit reflects the fact that there's a garage. Or if you're a tenant, since many of them are tenants, you're paying extra rent because you have the use of a garage. Now, all of a sudden, the association wanted to come in and say, well, you can't use your garage as it was intended because, you know, we're making you keep the door open all the time. That's why there was such outrage. But the association argues that, well, it's a condominium association, and the carports / garages are common areas. Or limited common areas. You know, you have use of them, but you don't own them. It's the same. It's the standard messy argument that happens with many condominium associations across the U.S. I mean, you think that you're getting a garage to use for yourself, but then somebody who's in the management of the association or on the board can get, a bee in their bonnet about some issue, and that's how these rules come about.
When I first got involved in online, I've been involved with HOAs locally, but that was before we had the internet and email and, you know, all of these things that we now have that's made it so easy to communicate across the world, really, globally. But in the early days, CAI, and there was a bank out in California, and the owner also was, I don't know, somehow involved with HOAs, and the owner also had hosted an internet list so that everybody within, mainly the industry, could communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And I was the fifth person to get on there. I was there really from the very beginning. I learned how to turn on my computer, and somehow I ended up meeting with one of the other four people who was already there. And he got me involved on this list. And it was mostly, as I said, mostly managers and attorneys and all of these people. There was one little chippy who was really arrogant and just really nasty, and she wanted to make sure that that managers had access to everybody's garage, whether it was common area or not. I mean, they weren't common area,
right?
And the reason was because people were parking in the driveway instead of in their garages, and she wanted to go in and make sure that they cleaned out their garage so there was room in the garage to park their cars.
Yeah.
She didn't want to see them.
As if it's anyone's business what you keep in your garage.
But the thing was,
as long as you're not harming anybody, you're conducting a legal activity in your home, it's nobody's business whether you fill up your garage with your stuff and park your car on the driveway.
And the arrogance of this woman.
Yeah.
It was like it was her right to go in there and inspect your private area because she might have decided that you weren't using it properly.
And
it's gone that way. It's scary.
Yeah. Well, that's why one of the follow-up reports on this particular association called Auburn Greens in California, they interviewed one of the owners, and she said, well, you know, she doesn't think it's a good idea that they want to keep the garage doors open, so she's not going to keep her garage door open. But she thinks that they could come up with a more reasonable solution. And if they want to come and inspect her garage once or twice a month, that's okay with her. I'm thinking to myself, do you really want to give the association that much freedom over your private property? Because even if you're renting, if you have use of that property, state laws in California and in most states are written such that, you know, your landlord or, you know, whoever owns your house cannot just show up and snoop around in your personal space whenever they want to. I mean, the law says you have to give notice before you go and inspect somebody's property, and there has to be a good reason to do it. You know, like if you want to have an annual inspection, or if you're showing the property to a future tenant, or, you know, there's some kind of an emergency where, you know, there's a telephone call that says, could you check on my my grandmother? I haven't heard from her in a long time, and, you know, I can't get her to answer the phone. Okay, those are valid reasons.
Absolutely.
To go in and to private property, whether it be the garage or inside the home itself. But to just say to your, to just volunteer, well, you know, why don't you come in and check out my garage twice a month? I think that's excessive. And it reminds me of the situation that you had discussed with Martha Bonetta, who's been a guest on your show a few times, the Conservation Authority was coming on her property and wanted to look in her closets. And, you know, people should not be so eager to give up their property rights in that way. Because if you give a manager or a board member an inch, they'll take a mile. You know, the next thing, they'll want to be looking at what you're throwing in your garbage can.
They do that. They do that.
You know, or come in and check out how you have your, how do you have your place decorated, and what kind of window coverings are you hanging up? And, things that don't really there's no real purpose. It's not as though there's a compelling reason for anybody to come in your property and check out exactly what you're doing, as long as you're not bothering anybody else or harming.
I think we've lost,
or the property.
We've lost complete respect for privacy. And I think over the past several decades, it's become accepted that if you want to come in and inspect my property, my house, the inside of my house, to see what kind of decorations I have, what style of furniture I have, then it's perfectly okay. Why is it perfectly okay? What is wrong with people?
Right.
What is wrong? What's wrong with someone who feels compelled to walk into a private home and inspect it to decide whether or not they're living properly? I mean, I cannot get my brain around that. That just, I find it so obnoxious.
And one of the things that they start to look for is, you know, because there's a big controversy now with the short-term rentals through Airbnb and VRBO. And so part of the reason that some managers want to get into your unit, especially if it's an apartment or a townhouse-style unit, is they want to look for evidence that you're renting the place out short-term, because they don't want that kind of activity going on in the community. But, you know, the ends don't justify the means.
Yeah, but, you know, if there's not a problem, what's the big deal? If there's not a problem, what is the big deal?
Right.
You know, if you have, you know, maybe you need the money. And so you're doing this to help you get through a bad patch.
Right. Yeah, because I know some people who, you know, if they're a single person, and it would help them immensely if they can have somebody rent out one of the rooms in their house, so that they can have a roommate, either short-term or long-term, to help make ends meet.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a housing shortage. There's a lot of people that don't have any place to go, and they're happy to have some place to crash so that they don't have to stay in a hotel or out on the street.
Well, I think they're cheaper, and a lot of people are looking for something cheaper.
Right.
And I was just reading something, especially about the millennials nowadays. They would rather spend the money on experiences and going places rather than all kinds of things. So to them, that would be ideal. Why waste money on a hotel if they can go stay someplace like that for a lot less money, grab some, just go to the clean up themselves and go to the grocery store, pick up some food and make their own meals.
Right.
You know, it makes perfectly good sense.
Right. Now, I do know there are some, the other side of the coin is that some people turn their home into kind of a de facto hotel, and you get people coming in from out of town that are kind of rowdy and they're up late and they're having parties in the house. And, now you have a real nuisance and you have a reason for intervention. But like you said, if it's just a situation where people are just trying to share space and expenses, I don't understand what the big deal is. And in some cases, people buy a condominium and they buy it in a resort area or a vacation area. And the whole purpose behind it is that they're going to offset part of their cost to own that property by doing vacation rental.
Yeah. And I know people who do that.
Right. Now you have some of these associations that are saying, well, we're going to change the rules now so that there can't be more than 20% or more than 30% of the people can rent their place. Or they can't rent it short term, or, they put all these restrictions on it. Well, now you're going to tick off a lot of people who bought the property with the expectation that they're going to offset their costs of a vacation home by renting it out to other people. But this is what's happening. This is one of the hottest controversies going on right now.
Well, I think, here's a good time. I'm not an attorney. I just play one on the air. But if you buy a house and there are no restrictions, you buy a house with the intention of renting it out, and there are no restrictions, and then the board cannot come, because that's a property right. Mm-hmm. They cannot come up and adopt a rule preventing you from doing that. They can put it to a vote, and they can amend the governing documents if it's voted on properly, and the courts have upheld that.
Right.
And so that's when you go back to, well, you knew that that your neighbors could change the rules on you, and you could,
And that happens. Sometimes they have enough votes to do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes they, there's a vote and the vote is contested because, maybe the ballots weren't handled correctly, or people who weren't eligible to vote were voting, or there's a number of things that could happen. But then you have cases where there's, depending on the size of the association and who owns how many units and what share of the condominium association, you could have a few people that own the lion's share of units in the association, and then they own enough votes, to push their agenda through.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the owners will say, well, there was no vote. Well, even if they had a vote, it wouldn't make any difference if somebody owns 75% or 80% of the vote, what the other 25% of the people think doesn't matter.
And that's a big problem. I mean, I've heard from people who live in smaller condominiums where somebody has bought up a whole lot of units and has the vote, and the people, it doesn't matter if everybody unanimously votes against it, as long as one person has the lion's share of the votes. And they can sit back and they don't have to pay, you know, they just push their vote through. That's where you come up with, you know, terminating associations and all of that. And we will
right.
be talking about that next month.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming up. But people need to be aware of this when they go in. I don't know what the answer is, Debbie, because there are no alternatives. You know, so many places you just don't have an option. You've got to get into an HOA and you've got to put up with all the nonsense that goes on with it.
Unless you move out of the area or out of the state.
It's not always feasible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always feasible. Why should you have to move out of a city?
You shouldn't.
You shouldn't have to move. I mean, it's a property right that's being taken away. And I don't care what the industry says about, well, you knew it, you shouldn't have bought it. The fact is that it's a nonsense argument. The fact is you don't have an option.
Right.
If your
right, and some
job is there,
yeah.
if you're working there, if your family's there, if you're going to school there, you
right.
have no option. You know, you're going to live there. Why should you rent if you can own? And why should
right.
you move just to get away from this? Why not give people an option? Some people like it. It's like the woman you were talking about. Oh, they can come in and inspect my garage twice a month. Really? Okay,
right.
that's fine. That's, you know, I think you're crazy, but,
right.
you know, if that's good for you. But why force it on everybody else?
Right. Right. And in so many cases, Shu, there's a fundamental conflict between owner-occupants and what I call investor-owners, you know, the people who don't live there. It's a second home for them. It's, you know, an investment where they rent it out to tenants or vacationers. And that group of owners, their interests are pitted against the people who bought the place to live in it as their home. And somehow, you know, the industry talks about, well, we need to balance the rights of all homeowners. But I say, whatever happened to the private property rights of owner-occupants as opposed to an investor or somebody who forms an LLC for themselves to generate a profit? Should there really be equal rights, or do people who are homesteading in a place deserve a little bit more, I don't know what the right word is, but I think they deserve a little bit more consideration, because the whole purpose of them buying the house was to live in it full time, unless they were buying into an association where everybody knew up front to begin with, this is a resort association, and the only reason that you should be buying this house is if you're buying it for an investment.
You bought a single-family home. You don't live in an HOA. I mean, that was one of your goals, and you achieved your goal, and congratulations
right.
for that. Your house looks, from the photos I've seen, absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But suppose you had a job, or you got a job, and you were going to go someplace else for, I don't know, maybe it's a 2 or 3 or 5 year job, but you know you want to come back to this home.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to sell it. You rent it out. Shouldn't your, I mean, the contract's going to be between you and your tenant. As long as the
right.
tenant's doing exactly what you want it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there shouldn't be any problems. The neighbors should have nothing to do with it. Your tenant
right.
should have the same exact rights that you had. And
right.
any, you know, whether they park their green car or a red car, you know, nobody should be able to tell them what to do. Nobody should, you know, if you have that right, you're giving that right to your tenant while your tenant is occupying that house.
Right. And I have the right to rent my house, and nobody can tell me that I can't.
Yeah.
It's
a property right.
But on the other hand, I can't control by vote what happens in my neighborhood. That's where the problem comes in with common interest communities, yeah. with association governed communities,
yes.
because what happens is you get voting blocks.
Yes.
And what happens is you get an investor owner voting block pitted against the owner occupant voting block, and quite often the investors win out over time. And so if you're buying into that kind of environment, expecting it to be that if this is going to be your forever home, or you're going to have this peace of mind and you're going to have a peaceful place and you're going to know your neighbors. Well, that's an unrealistic expectation. And it's becoming more and more unrealistic, based upon the reports that I'm seeing all over the country. It's not just happening in resort areas and in Florida and Arizona and California. It's starting to happen in regular, what I would call what used to be residential neighborhoods are shifting. And even places that used to be mostly owner-occupied are shifting to that there's more tenants, even in single-family home neighborhoods, which isn't necessarily a problem, except when you consider the association governance model and the voting blocks that can form. That can cause a problem, because what happens is, let's say you have a neighborhood of 35 single-family homes, and out of those 35 single-family homes, you have a couple, maybe four landlord owners, and they own, say 20 or 25 of those 35 homes. Now they're able to make up whatever kind of rules or regulations or restrictions they want in your neighborhood of 35 homes. And since they have the vote, you can't do or say anything about it, and you're bound to follow those amended rules.
And that's a problem, isn't it?
That's the problem.
That's the flaw, and that's why no matter what you do with all of these legislative activities, you will never fix the problem.
Right.
We have taken residential America down this path and into this big black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's trying to fix it and make it pretty and maybe spray some cologne on it. It still stinks. It still stinks.
You've given rights to the property, not the person.
It still stinks.
That's what happened. And in doing so, in attaching the right to the property, you're basically giving more rights to whoever owns the most property.
But let's go back to the stupid stuff, because
yep.
there's so much stupid stuff out there. And
yep.
I think you said it best. This is just plain stupid in one of your blogs. Fair housing, $1 million for not allowing kids to play on grassy area.
Oh, yeah.
When I first got involved, my friend, the late Pat Wigington, who was in Maryland, her son, she lived in a condominium, and there was this big grassy field. And so her son would go down, and he would meet up with his friends. And so she would keep an eye on him from the unit. And she could always see him and the other mm-hmm. kids. And so he was perfectly safe. So you end up with these old biddies who decide they don't like the sound of children laughing and having
right.
a good time. So they decide that this is going to be off limits.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the kids can go to the school and play. Well, the school was not nearby. It was not within sight of the units. But no, it was just these old biddies who decided, hey, we just don't want kids playing here. We
right.
want our peace and quiet.
Right.
So that created a whacking great big, a big story, which was totally, totally ridiculous. It got It got Pat involved in the HOA struggle, and she was very, very good. And that's how people get started. You know, they're targeted.
Right.
There's something idiotic.
Right.
But in in one of these cases, it cost the homeowners $1 million.
Right. Silver Tree Mojave Homeowners Association in Fremont, California, to be specific.
But it's not. But it happens all the time.
Right, it happens all the time. They get to, and it's more. It happens mostly in condominium associations, but you're starting to see it in townhouse associations too, even if they're run as a homeowners association and not a condominium association. You're starting to see it in some single family home neighborhoods where the homes are kind of close together, and you have a neighbor that, you know, an older neighbor, they don't have any kids, and next door the kids might have a swing set or something in the backyard, and you know, they go out to play and they make noise, as kids will do when they go outside, and the houses are close together, so the noise, it seems to be amplified, and so then they come up with all of these rules that you know, make it difficult for children to play. But where it's really a problem is in these apartment-style or townhouse-style places where there's no real private backyard for kids to play in. So the only other place they have to go is any grassy common area or, you know, if there's like a road or a parking area where they might want to do bike riding or, you know, they need a hard surface to ride bikes or do a skateboard or something of that sort. And then you get all the other owners that are up in arms, well, it's not safe, and I have to worry about these kids when I'm driving in here, and there could be liability, you know, or they just don't like, some people just don't like children. Whatever the reason was, in Silver Tree Mojave Homeowners Association, they came up with a very extensive list of rules against children being on the common area for any reason. And basically, they couldn't do any sort of playing whatsoever. And the couple of the residents, many of them were tenants, some of them were homeowners. They filed a complaint with Fair Housing, and it took a couple of years, but the upshot of it was that the there was an $800,000 award given to hundreds of homeowners. I think there's like over 300 homeowners in the class action. And it amounts to, according to reports, about $2,300 per resident, current and former residents and tenants of this association that were essentially harassed by their association not to allow their children to play outside. In addition to that, there were a couple of attorneys through an organization called Project Sentinel that provided pro bono legal assistance to these homeowners in this lawsuit. And in a separate action, the attorneys who fought this lawsuit did go back to court and try to recoup some of their fees. So they got another $269,000 in legal fees on top of that $800,000. There was a fine that they had to pay. So all in all, it cost the association more than $1 million, all because some people on the board decided that they didn't want to have any children playing on the grass outside of the building, which is absurd.
You know, you see people going in and they're told, oh, yes, there's a swimming pool, and these are the amenities if you buy in here. And there's a swimming pool. My kids love swimming. I'm going to buy here. I don't care that there's an HOA. I want my kids to have. And then you find out that HOAs come in and ban kids from going in the pool because they make a noise, because they splash, because there's water on the side. I mean, why are we giving idiots so much power?
Right. Well, but basically, most legal experts are saying now that you cannot, just like this fair housing case points out, you cannot discriminate against one type of owner over another.
No.
But what they're doing is they're saying, well, you can make rules that apply to everybody in the pool. So they can say, well, you know, you can't have any floating toys or inner, you know, whatever they call those inner tubes, the swimmy things that you put on the little kids.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have, you know, there can't be, nobody can go on the common area for any reason, you know. Well, essentially, you're having the same effect, right? Because mostly who's going to be going on those common areas to play is going to be kids. So even though they're not saying in the rule that kids can't ride their bike or kids can't step on the grassy areas, they're just saying that nobody can do it. It has a disproportionate effect on children. So I would expect, I'm not an attorney either, but I would expect, based upon what I've read, that there's going to be more challenges to this effect, where the attorneys for owners and residents are going to say there's a disparate effect, that it disproportionately affects families with children, some of these rules, even though it doesn't explicitly say that children can't ride their bike or can't be on the sidewalk with, you know, a riding toy.
We have.
I just think that's what's going to happen, but we'll see.
We have bigger problems. We have such huge problems. You're talking about common areas, and so you're going to stop people from using the common areas which you're paying for. So what's the sense in designing and developing these stupid places? And big picture, by preventing kids from going out and playing, we're forcing them onto the couch in front of the TV with their games and not getting out and not running around and playing in the fresh air like you and I did when we were growing up.
Right.
And we have an obesity problem. We have problems with all kinds of diseases that are because of this cramming people in and not giving them elbow room.
Mm-hmm.
And not allowing them to run around and play.
I mean, and kids getting problems with, you know, attention problems, problems with depression and anxiety. You know, they don't have time to get their energy out. When you exercise, it releases endorphins that make you feel better. You're in a better mood.
Yeah.
You know, they help you sleep better, you know, than children aren't sleeping at night and they're feeling anxious. And this is a problem even in our schools, where they're not even allowing the kids to get out for recess.
Yeah.
Or very minimal time downtime for recess.
Yeah.
And then to come home and not be able to even play on your own property, on your own common property or your own private property in some cases, because you're making too much noise, you know, you're putting parents especially in a very difficult spot.
Well, we just seem to have turned the reins over to the basis, the dumbest of the dumb, and given them all these powers and said, here, go ahead. You rule. You decide. I mean, I went to bat for my grandson in school because it was super cold. They decided he was being punished. So he had to sit when it was really, really cold, and he was a tiny little thing, not, you know, very skinny and not, you know, not. They made him sit on a concrete piece of ground leaning against a brick building while all the kids ran around. You know, he could have. During recess, he had to watch the kids running around. He's sitting on this icy cold stuff leaning against. You know, he could have had all kinds of serious problems. I actually called the principal, And he called me back. He had a meeting with the teachers, and he said, we have changed our policy at the school based on what we talked about, what you talked about. He said, you're absolutely right. I said, you know, the kids are antsy in class, so you make them sit on a cold thing when it's freezing. I mean, it was below freezing. It was like it was now, you know, six degrees, 18 degrees, whatever it was. And instead of letting them run around or making sure they run around and get that out of their system, you're risking their health.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, what are people thinking? Where is their mind? Where's their brain?
I wish I knew.
It just scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah.
It really does. Parking on the street. City, county, state-owned streets. All of a sudden, the association has the right to decide whether or not you can park on something the association doesn't own, because they don't think they want their place looking like they don't want all these cars sitting around.
Right. They don't want the cars sitting out on the street in front of the house.
So, I mean, is that a stupid rule or what?
It's really dumb. And the thing is, it's going to be very unexpected for many owners who are going to be under the impression, you know, I'm sure that 99% of them who buy a house in an association that has public roads, they're going to expect that anybody can park on the public road, including themselves. Because, you know, Shu, these days, people have more than one car, and especially if you have some teenagers or college-age students in the family or an extended family members living there, some families might have three or four vehicles. Or you might have a work vehicle that you use for work and another, you know, like a truck or something, and then another vehicle that you use for driving around for family activities. And most houses have a one or a two car garage. That's it. And if somebody is storing some, you know, lawn equipment or something in their garage, maybe there's only room for one car in the garage. Maybe there's room for no cars in the garage. And you have these driveways that, as you know, we've talked about this before, the driveways can hardly fit anything on them.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you can fit one or two cars in the driveway. And if it's a longer vehicle, it may stick out over the sidewalk, and that's not allowed. And so then the only other option for folks is to park on the street. And same for, you know, if grandma comes to visit, where does grandma have to park? Well, if there's nowhere to park in the driveway, they've got to park on the street. Well, now some of these homeowners associations in, you know, Florida, California, Arizona, New Jersey, other places are saying you can't park. There's no parking on the street in front of anybody's house because we don't like the way it looks. And that's, you know, that's part of the rules or the restrictions that you agree to when you buy the house.
But even when those streets are owned by the city and not necessarily owned by the association.
Right, or the county, right.
Yeah, or the state, you know.
Right. If it's a public road, and there's been cases where the association will start to tow these cars because, you know, they were parked, especially if it's overnight, you know. They'll come out and they'll with the tow truck and start towing these vehicles away, and homeowners will call the local police and say, wait a minute, they can't be towing my car. And the local police comes and says, well, it's a civil matter for you to work out with your HOA.
Yeah.
And you would think that this shouldn't be legal, but there's actually, I found an article online that said that there is actually case law for this out of both New Jersey and Maryland. One case is Maryland Estates Homeowners Association versus Karen Puckett and Chris Schallert. And there's another one in New Jersey, Verna versus the Lynx at Valley Brook Neighborhood Association. And basically, the court decided that since there these restrictions are written into the CC&Rs and you agreed to that by buying the home, even though it's a public road, you agreed to that restriction, therefore the HOA can enforce these restrictions, which is bizarre because I don't know what happens if you have a guest or a relative or somebody that comes in the neighborhood or somebody who's even not related that comes in the neighborhood and parks on the street. I don't know how that can be enforced by the HOA. And why should it be? I mean, what is the big deal that you look out of your living room window across the street and happen to see a couple of cars parked in front of your neighbor's house? I just don't understand how that reduces property values or how that bothers anybody.
It doesn't, and it might bother some old biddy, I don't know, but the thing is it doesn't I know. I mean, what it's just some senseless people might get all offended about it. But the thing is, this property values argument is nothing but pure and utter bull.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, if my home has less value if I can't park where I want to park.
But nobody's going to come and buy the house across the street and say, oh, I'm going to offer you $10,000 less because your neighbor across the street has his car parked in front of his house. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense. And you sent me a list of things, but it seems that people are looking for non-HOA housing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard from the Ferrans, I heard from Mariah, and she said it's so nice to be able to relax and know that the HOA cannot fine me, they cannot foreclose to collect that fine. I feel so much better. It is so relaxing. My neighbors and I get along better now. Property values are through the roof.
Right.
And that's because they gutted the association, the powers of the association. So
yeah, I often when I'm walking around in my neighborhood, because most of the homes around me are not governed by any kind of homeowners association. There are some homeowner association neighborhoods in the area, but the majority of them are not. And when I take a walk around, I think to myself, if this were a homeowner association, just about every house would have probably have some kind of violation, whether it be sidewalk chalk on the driveway or, you know, the color of somebody's mailbox or their front door or, you know.
A dusty mailbox.
The yard isn't quite perfect. They didn't put their garbage can away yet. This person has an RV parked, you know, in their driveway. It's just crazy. I guess this stuff matters to a small minority of people, but I think the vast majority of buyers, and particularly the newer generation of buyers, think this is all utter nonsense. And, you know, they would rather have the freedom and liberty to do what they want on their property than to have somebody looking over their shoulder ready to fine them, for letting their kids draw a hopscotch on the sidewalk.
The peace of mind that comes from being an owner in your home without having to worry about somebody else's taste. I mean, we've gone so far down this rabbit hole. It's just unbelievable. We have trained people to think that this is normal, and it's not.
No.
It is not normal in the least.
It's not healthy.
It's not. It's not. You won't believe this, but we are just about out of time. Debbie, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for starting us off on a fun. Well, it's not funny. I thought we'd do a lot more giggling about this, but but the stupidity.
Well, thank you for having me.
The stupidity continues.
Oh yeah.
It never ends. But thank you. And by the way, your blog, independentamericancommunities.com, right?
That's correct.
And if you haven't seen it yet, guys, go check it out. It is amazing. She has a lot of great stuff there. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks for having me, Shu. Always enjoy talking to you.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.